You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Yesterday morning was crazy at Renfrew Collegiate Institute. This didn't pop up in any of my news feeds until after the show was finished yesterday. Understandable, I guess. We're done at 9 o'clock and school is just starting to get underway, but they had a very scary day yesterday morning. Students started arriving at the school, and when they got there, the OPP was already on hand, right at the main entrance. Turns out they'd found some graffiti on a wall sometime the day before with the message, "Shoot up, June 7th. June 7th was, of course, yesterday. Senior staff at the school district took it seriously, as they should. They alerted parents and kids attending the school. Some parents actually just kept their kids at home. About 10 OPP officers were there inside and outside the school. Cruisers were parked outside the main entrance. The officers on the scene were watching students come into the school, checking out to make sure nothing was suspicious. They had marked vehicles, unmarked vehicles, we're told, parked in front of the building, the back of the building. It was pretty crazy. And they said, look, we're taking this potential threat really seriously. Officers are conducting an investigation into the origin of the graffiti, and the investigation itself is ongoing. Probably a hoax. But, and I wonder if people would have been half as scared if we hadn't had recent school shootings again in the United States. Added to the fact that the Prime Minister has exploited those American shootings to virtue signal with changing legislation that does nothing to fix the problems we have in Canada with guns, which are handguns in the hands of criminals, not automatic weapons in the hands of kids. Those weapons are already banned in our country. But I think he added to the fear. I think he tried to capitalize on the fear. So those parents and those kids must have thought, because this is what he does. He capitalizes on this strange cultural phenomena we have in Canada, where we think we're Americans, but we know we're not really Americans. But we're so inundated by their news, we talk about them as us and we. What are we going to do about the gun violence in schools? We are going to do nothing because we're not in control of it, and it's not happening to us. It's happening to them. But that's the way we think as Canadians, and the Prime Minister tried to capitalize on that, and as a result, I'm sure, made people even more fearful. The question is, would you have sent your kids to school in Renfrew? To Renfrew Collegiate Institute? I'm not sure I would have.
No chance. If I'd known that, no chance.
Because it's also possible that a Canadian kid could be inspired as a copycat to try to copy it. And even if he doesn't have the same kind of weapons there, and he only has a rifle, and he has to keep reloading it, well, one wounded kid is too much. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I would have. I think you see that graffiti, all you can do is shut the school down. I'm surprised they even opened at all. On the other hand, have you ever been in high school? Now, what happened when I was in high school is people pulled the fire alarm in the middle of exam week.
Oh, we had that every once in a while too.
Right.
Yeah.
Now they write, "Shoot up June 7th as a way of closing down the school as a very bad prank. But
jeez.
Anyway, some tense moments out there, I'm sure. The federal conservatives and the New Democrats are actually combining forces. Who knew? They agree on something. They want the government to do more to address the cost of living crisis in this country. Now, I think someone should remind the NDP leader that he sort of is the government because he's in a coalition now with the Liberals. But, you know, he's trying to play both sides, right? I'm on the Liberal side, except when I'm not. What do you need from me? Who do you need me to be today? The interim Tory leader, Candace Bergen, accused the Prime Minister of being vindictive in his opposition to her party's proposals on inflation.
He thinks he's hurting conservatives politically by saying no to our proposals. In fact, he is punishing Canadians with his petty political vengeance.
And the NDP leader said that, yeah, I'm not going to tell you what he said. It doesn't matter because he's part of the problem. I'm sorry, Jugmeet, you don't get to now stand up in the House, not on this show, and pretend you're the opposition. Now, I'm not going to let you do that. I'm not going to let you away with it. If occasionally I do play your soundbite, I will remind people of that, that you're playing on both sides. You're no better than Justin Trudeau, who sees a protest on Parliament Hill. You know that they're there to protest against you. Then he joins the protest, holds up a sign. Ooh, look at me. Unless it's a bunch of truckers and he can use that to make the Conservatives look crazy, then he'll use that. But it's all about politics with that man. What else is going on today? Oh, 7 years after her own life was altered by gun violence, a former U.S. Congresswoman, Gabby Giffords, stood in front of the Washington Monument and lobbied for stricter gun controls. Now, it is her country, and it is her problem, and she's done a lot to try to change it, but nothing ever changes. She was surrounded by more than 45,000 small vases or vases of white and orange flowers representing each of the Americans killed by gun violence every year. Think about that. 45,000 of them. Gifford says stopping gun violence takes courage.
The courage to do what's right. The courage to new ideas. I've seen great courage when my life was on the line. Now is the time to come together. Be responsible. Democrats, Republicans, everyone. We must never stop fighting.
You can hear that she's still struggling with the damage that that bullet did to her. Brave woman. You know, I thought, Matt, you were actually going to do for trending today.
What's that?
Was Matthew McConaughey was speaking out at the White House.
Yeah, you know what? We could do that violence. One, actually. Let's do that. Let's actually do that for trending.
You're going to swap it up? Yeah. Just like that. I just mentioned it just
no,
like
No, because you're right. I saw that, and it was powerful stuff.
Yeah. I just feel like we need to fit it in somewhere.
Yeah,
in
and that's a
we're
good
not going to present
it
as Matthew McConaughey is trying to fix our problem. What do we need to do about it? But you know what? They are our neighbors, and we have relatives and friends and family live there. Canadians go there to retire. So it's not that it's meaningless to us. Of course, I'd like to see them fix their gun problem with their own laws, for sure. Matthew McConaughey, can I tell you something that's going to make me sound really stupid?
Yeah.
I was watching the new TV show, The Lincoln Lawyer.
Yeah.
I mean, I accidentally look stupid all the time, but I try not to deliberately look stupid, but this will make me look stupid. I was watching The Lincoln Lawyer.
Yeah.
The TV show.
On Netflix, yeah.
On Netflix. Then I remembered Matthew McConaughey starred in the film version.
10 years ago, yeah.
Of The Lincoln Lawyer. And then I thought, that's why he does the Lincoln commercials on TV.
I think it is, yeah.
I swear to you, I had not made the link.
All right.
I always wonder, like, why Lincoln? Why is he promoting Lincolns? Why is that? I mean, nice cars, but why? Why those and not another car?
Yeah, he was sort of tied to them 10 years ago.
But then it hit me just a month ago. He's the Lincoln Lawyer.
Yeah.
Now nothing, I get it.
Nothing gets past you. Sometimes it takes time, but you come around.
Dumb, right? Not to make that connection right away. But I'm not even sure I saw The Lincoln Lawyer. I think I did.
I remember enjoying it. And then,
I saw it and forgot all about it. Moved on. Then he shows up in Lincoln commercials. I didn't think. There's Matthew. It's not like if Tom Cruise was advertising F-16s. I would have made that link.
Yes, exactly. Even I would have made that one.
Bigger movie, bigger cultural effect. The Lincoln Lawyer was a good movie, but it was one of thousands of good movies.
Yeah, it was just something you went to see. Maybe you watched it on streaming. It wasn't
6:16 in the morning rush.
TV.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Look at Connor letting the song play a little bit longer. Harry Styles. That's going to be stuck in my head all day. I like that song. My daughter.
I love that song.
That's not a bad album. The whole thing is pretty good. Harry Styles, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not imagining.
No, I didn't say anything because you were right.
Well, after that debacle with Matthew McConaughey and not realizing
you never know
the Lincoln commercials, it's good to double check. You've been hearing about the delays at Pearson Airport in Toronto. This is important to Ottawa residents because if you're going anywhere internationally or just visiting Toronto, chances are you've gone through Pearson. And it has become a nightmare of delays. People waiting hours, sometimes overnight. Security problems, customs issues. You've got staff shortages and you've got all these mandates still in place that don't seem to have a whole lot of reason or purpose anymore. And it's just been awful. And experts say the federal government knew about the surge in passengers 5 months ago, but failed to act. They're acting like it's a big surprise, right? Same with passports. We didn't know that people who couldn't travel for 2 years would suddenly want to travel and their passports would have expired. And what? Yes, in 2 years, people's passports expire. Children are born who didn't have passports who now need passports to travel with their parents. And yeah, there's going to be, I'm just taking a wild guess here, but I think if you have 2 years of COVID restrictions, you're probably going to have about a 2-year backlog in passport applications. They didn't seem to know that was coming. Anyway, the transport minister, Omar Alagba, says that despite the months-long struggles, the situation is improving.
I look at data regularly, and the percentage of passengers who are waiting 30 minutes or longer has been cut in half over the last couple of weeks.
Has it, though?
Has it?
How do you keep those stats? I'm not sure. Not sure how you can actually know that. Has he gone to Pearson? Because it's the video coming out of there and the social media complaints. It doesn't feel like that NHL player. What's his podcast?
Spittin' Chicklets. It was Ryan Whitney.
Spittin' Chicklets guy. Would he have been there Monday and Tuesday night?
Right.
2 weeks ago, but now it was just Monday night. He had to sleep on the floor at Pearson. Toronto's Mayor John Tory is not impressed.
This is the biggest city in the country. This is the economic engine of the country. This is the gateway to all of Canada. This is just not a Toronto problem.
No, he's right.
Yeah, hard to disagree.
It's an everybody problem. So you applied for Daisy's passport when? April or something?
Yeah, so early April, first week of April, I applied. They charged my credit card at the end of April, so I know they've gotten the application, and still nothing. They haven't
They're
called
quick to take the money, huh? They're right. Not behind on that.
And they haven't called her guarantor yet. I don't know if they call for everyone. I'm trying to remember if they do.
Sometimes I think they don't call for anyone, but I don't know.
I don't know. That's the thing.
You still don't have it?
No.
Did you pay for the expedited? Because you can do like the fast
No, I ride. Did not. Because we don't have a trip plan. I just thought she should probably have one. But it's been 2 months now. And still nothing.
Yeah. If you had a trip plan, that would have been a problem.
Right.
I wonder when you pay for, or even if you can still pay to expedite it. Maybe they're not doing that right now. I don't know.
Well, there was a spot on the form, like, when are you traveling? And if you click, maybe just because I checked unknown, it's now just on the bottom
was
of
a
pile
huge
somewhere.
Mistake.
I should have made up a trip for like June 1st.
Yep. Yeah. Well, it was a good idea to lie on your passport application. I highly recommend that.
On second thought, you know. Yeah. Maybe I'll just
I would rather
first.
Book a trip, tick the box,
right.
Give them the date, and then cancel the trip because you're less likely to end up, well, it's Canada. You're not going to be imprisoned. You get a slap on the wrist or something for it. But yeah, I wouldn't lie.
I swear the other stuff's all legit. Her name, her address. Yeah. She is a Canadian citizen.
It's not going to matter because you're going to have a new one now in 2 months. You can't travel because he won't have a passport.
I know. I'm screwed.
6:28, The Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
Everyone has a reputation to defend. That's why on Wednesdays, we bring you The Reputation Rescue with Karen Gordon and Bill Carroll.
I resign my membership from the tour. I'm going to play here, for now, and that's the plan. But what the consequences are going to be, I can't comment on how the tour is going to handle.
Dustin Johnson, former number one golfer in the world, Wayne Gretzky's son-in-law. Who do you think's richer, Dustin Johnson or Wayne Gretzky? Easy one.
I think it's Dustin Johnson now, that's for sure.
I think it was before, but he's got like $125 million American dollars to go play in this 1 week golf tournament. But now he's joined this LIV tour, the Saudi Arabian tour, and it's very controversial. All of that is what it is, Karen, and I wouldn't have cared much about it one way or the other. But then when he canceled on the Canadian Open days before he was supposed to show up, his reputation in my mind has been changed forever. What is he doing right now? It seems kind of short-sighted.
Yeah, I think it's really short-sighted. So just so everybody knows, the RBC Canadian Open is our premier golf event here in Canada. It's sponsored by RBC, who also sponsors Dustin Johnson and Graham McDowell, both on the PGA Tour. RBC has sponsored Dustin Johnson since 2018 when they got him with great fanfare. And part of his deal is he shows up at the RBC Canadian Open. That's part of the deal. It's your big sponsor. He won it last year, I believe, or the last time it was played.
I think that's probably the cornerstone of the deal, because with the Canadian Open happening the week before the U.S. Open, it's been tough at times to get big names to come. Some years better than others, but it's a struggle. So now you've got a guaranteed big name coming, and he's getting paid by RBC all year long. But this is really the reason he's supposed to be there, and the guy walks away.
A week before. And I'll tell you why I think it's really gross. I think it's really gross because his father-in-law is Canadian sports royalty. His father-in-law is Wayne Gretzky. If you can name me a bigger athlete and a bigger name in sports in this country, I dare you. And his father-in-law is
give
Wayne
me a minute.
No, you can't.
No, I got
you
nothing.
Can't.
I got nothing.
And here he goes and does this. And I feel really bad for RBC. I mean, he's on all the promotional materials. He's in everything. He's part of the hype to get people to the Canadian Open. And he does this a week before. I mean, on top of which, the decision to leave the PGA Tour to go into this Saudi-backed golf league in and of itself is problematic and has really created quite a rift within sports. And it's part of the reason for the downfall of Phil Mickelson, which kind of made me happy because I despise that guy. But there's all kinds of things here, the worst of it being to bail the same week.
Yeah. Now, we haven't even talked about attaching your reputation to this Saudi golf tour. Well, another one of the golfers who's joined it, and Dustin Johnson pretty much said, yeah, I agree with everything he said. They're trying to spin it now that, you know, the Saudis are trying to become more modern, and if this helps accelerate it, then I'm happy to be part of that. And come on, like, no one is buying this excuse. You're doing it because the money is huge. That's why you're doing it. There's no other reason. You're not going to accelerate women's rights by going to play in a Saudi golf tournament. You're not going to bring back Khashoggi. He's not going to suddenly come back to life. You're not going to change this. Here's the problem, though. You know, we all have Saudi oil in our gas tanks. So, you know, it is tricky to get involved in international politics. So these golfers are saying, you know what, we can't, that's not our job. Our job is to play golf, and we're going to do it. So whether people buy that or not, or it hurts their reputation. The other thing, though, Karen, is will the PGA Tour ever welcome them back if this Saudi deal doesn't work out?
Well, this is the interesting part, I think. So, and I agree 100%. Why don't you just say it's about the money? Just say it. You're getting $125 million. Just say it. Don't give us this crap around how woke Saudi Arabia is suddenly becoming. Give me a break. That's the interesting part about the PGA. Will the PGA double down? It seems right now, and a couple of them have resigned. Mickelson's refusing to resign his PGA membership. He has a lifetime membership. And, you know, when you look, part of Dustin Johnson's communications have been, I'm really sad to leave the Ryder Cup, and maybe there's something around the Ryder Cup, but I don't think it goes both ways. I don't think you get to leave, you know, the PGA in this tremendous of fashion and hope that it can come back, right? Like, you can't do that. And then what happens? What happens if it fails? Dustin Johnson's earnings before joining this tour were $75 million. So it's not like he was desperate for cash and needed to go, but you know, that'll be the other thing to watch is what happens. There's a lot of prestigious, you know, PGA events. So that'll be, to me.
Yeah, and how many prestigious events can the LIV Tour give you?
Yeah.
None. None of them are prestigious yet. They're all just about the money for the players. No one is saying, oh, I can't wait to watch the next LIV tournament. I mean,
No, there's one article. I found one article on how to watch this tournament. And as I understand it, I'm not an expert in this, but as I understand it, it's going to be televised via some kind of streaming, maybe on YouTube. And when you think of when you, you know, you sit down for the Masters and you sit down Friday to Sunday to watch the Masters, to watch the Open, to watch all of it, it's all NBC, whatever. But this will be streamed on YouTube, like it's or something like that. So it's a bit strange in the hype, and you wonder.
I could just see my mother-in-law, who loves watching golf, trying to figure out how to bring up YouTube on her iPad and then stream it through her Apple TV box so she can watch it on a bigger screen. That's going to be something. That's going to be worth $125 million right there, just to see that happen. You know who's going to do that, don't you? You know who's going to have to set that up for her? Plus, when is it going to be played? Is it the middle of the night?
Yeah, that's the other thing. When is it going to be played? When, you know, and quite frankly, Dustin Johnson and Phil Mickelson are my two least favorites on the tour. So I'm like, see you later. I'm happy not to see Phil Mickelson ever play in another golf tournament.
One day I'll have to ask you, what is it with you and Phil Mickelson?
I think he's disingenuous. I think he's, I've never cared for him as a golfer. I've never cared for him as a golfer.
I just love that you're all in on golf enough that you have strong feelings about any of the players. Do you know what LIV means?
No,
I assumed it was an acronym.
Yeah.
But it's not an acronym. LIV is the Roman numerals for 54, which is the score you'd get if you birdied every hole.
Ah, well, there's an interesting golf fact.
Yeah.
I've never birdied any hole, so that would be unknown to me. But, well, once I birdied a hole, but that's it.
Birdied? I could, like, triple bogey and be thrilled.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if I could pick the ball up and drop it in the hole, I couldn't birdie.
Oh, my favorite club is my foot wedge. So that's about tells you about the status of my game.
Thank you, Karen.
Thanks, Bill.
Karen Gordon with Reputation Rescue, principal of Gordon's Strategy, trying to rescue Dustin Johnson's reputation. I don't know. I can think of 125 million reasons I might not care about my reputation afterwards. But the problem is he still in the long term could be leaving money on the table. If this thing doesn't work out and he turns into a pariah, it may not be the good long play. He's working too much on his short game. The Morning Rush, Bill Carroll. Good morning, Doc.
Morning, Bill.
I've seen words like game changer when it comes to weight control. Game changer. A drug being approved in the U.S. I won't give you the name of the drug there, but the generic name is different. But I think it's the same one that you've been talking about here in Canada, right?
Yeah, it's semaglutide or Ozempic, and it actually this one called Wegovy is same company that makes it. It's just in a greater dose, and it was the doses that were used in the clinical studies. And interestingly, it has been approved in Canada. It was approved in November of 2021. Except when I've tried to prescribe it, nobody has it. So it's approved but not available in Canada. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's a production issue or they're waiting for the U.S. approval. But nevertheless, you can still get it in the form of Ozempic. This is a medication that was originally designed to treat people with type 2 diabetes and found through clinical studies to have significant impact on facilitating weight loss by suppressing appetite. And the way it does this is it follows our own biology. Throughout human history and evolution, we predominantly lived in environments where food was really scarce. And so our bodies had to adapt to that situation to stimulate us to go eat, because it's not just a matter of thinking that you're hungry. There's reasons why you get hungry. And the way it did that is that in our fat cells, we have a hormone called leptin. And most people, their brains are exquisitely sensitive to leptin. Our brains don't care what our weight is. In fact, it has no means of knowing how much you weigh. But what it does know is if you are losing weight, because leptin levels will decrease if you're losing weight. And in times where we lived when food was scarce, losing weight was not getting ready for a party. This was serious. You were starving. And so your brain would register that reduction and stimulate you to go hunt or go gather food or go eat. And that would happen below conscious level. And so what this medication does is it reduces the sensitivity to that leptin decrease. So as you lose weight, you don't have that rebound feeling of trying to struggle with the hunger that results from that. Secondly, it mimics the same hormones that your stomach and intestines produce after you eat. Because how do you know you're full? Well, the only way you know you're full is by the hormones that get released to tell your brain that you're full after you've eaten something. And so it mimics those hormones. So it makes your brain think that you have eaten already, so that you're not as hungry all the time. And so that's how it works. And
so I have many questions, and I won't ask all of them, but
sure.
If your fat cells are involved in releasing this hormone, does that mean the more fat cells you have, the bigger effect it has on your body? In other words, are you in this downward spiral? The more fat cells you have, the more you feel the hunger, and then the more you eat, and then the more fat cells you develop. Or am I not getting, is it backwards from that?
Yeah, it's more the fat cells contain the hormone. And when you start losing weight, you have a reduction of volume of your fat cells. You never lose the fat cells that have been created. That's why when you gain
weight. No, but I'm saying, do you have more fat cells to release that hormone? Therefore, the effects are even stronger.
It's more based on the weight loss itself. So if you're losing someone who is, you know, who weighs 100 kilos versus someone that's 80 kilos and you've lost 2 kilos of weight, it's the same hormone concentration. It's not any different. It's based on the volume or the mass of fat cells that are there. So it's a good question, but it doesn't necessarily work that way. It's more the brain is just registering a decrease. And what tends to happen is some people are much more sensitive than others. And so their hunger is overstimulated. Now that process of being hungry.
Yeah. I look at, we've got 4 members of our family.
Yeah.
And, 2 of us like to snack and we're hungry all the time.
Yeah.
And 2 of us feel like, oh, I'm a little faint. I guess I should eat. They don't seem to, I don't know if this is true or not, but I've over the years started to figure out, you don't really feel hunger the way I do. Like your stomach is growling, but you don't think you're hungry. Like I feel hungry long before my stomach starts to make that empty sound. So I think there's a basic difference in how we're perceiving whether or not we need to eat or we have hunger.
Yeah. And also there's 2 other factors too. One is, again, we evolved when food was scarce and the calorie density of the food that we consumed was quite low. So for any given volume, so let's just say you take a plateful of food 150 years ago, had X number of calories. Now, a plateful of food, the same volume, has 5X calories, so 5 times the amount. So it's not as if, and you know, this is where fat shaming comes in and blaming people for being overweight and saying, oh, you know, just control yourself. It has nothing to do with that. And it really displays a certain ignorance about how weight is managed in our bodies. When you consume calories, extra calories, it doesn't have to be a lot. It's 100 calories extra a day will mean you will gain 12 pounds in a year. 100 calories is almost like a half or 2/3 of a glass of orange juice extra a day, or half a beer more a day than your body needs in terms of calories. That's how easy it is to gain weight. And so when someone says that, oh, you know, I've gained weight, it's not over a month, it's over years where it happens. And then it becomes very difficult to reverse that process. So that's kind of what we're dealing with.
So obviously you're a big believer in this drug. It's taken by injection once a week. And they still recommend, according to this article that we both have been looking at, I know you knew about it long before this article, but you still need to have calorie reduction. You can't just take this needle and then eat 5 cheeseburgers a day. That doesn't work that way.
Right. But the key thing with this is that you're not going to be eating 5 cheeseburgers because your appetite is going to be suppressed. There's a very interesting dynamic that plays out when you start taking the medication. That's been my experience. And I have over 100 patients now taking the medication successfully too. And I'm not saying everybody, but in the high 90 percentile of people are responding to treatment, is that you're looking at your plate of food that you normally would eat. And your eyes are telling you, you should eat this. And your brain is going, but you're not hungry. There's no reason for you to eat it. But you go, but I should be eating this because I always eat this. And your brain's going, no, you don't have to eat this. You're not hungry. And it's at the beginning, it's really strange because your entire life, your appetite has been a major driver of how you consume food. And now it's being put on the back burner, and it's like a relearning process. So it's
but this drug is forever. Like, you go off the drug and people gain the weight back.
You might gain the weight back, but you're also reducing the risk of taking other drugs forever because of high blood pressure, diabetes, right, heart attack, kidney disease, osteoarthritis, all sorts of other things. So,
right, so you're going to be on drugs one way or the other, likely, if you already have an issue with your weight.
Yeah, and there's
so this would replace those. Will it one day be orally received, or do you think it'll always have to be
right
under
now,
the skin?
There is an oral version of semaglutide, but the studies don't show. First of all, it's more expensive than the injection, and secondly, it doesn't work as well. And the reason is that it gets processed and broken down when you take it by mouth, so it's harder for the body to get that dose. Whereas when you inject it, and you have to take it every day if it's a tablet, versus once a week with the injection. And the injection is not a major thing. It's a tiny, tiny diabetes needle. It's thinner than a
How many
hair.
Of your patients, I'm way over time, but how many of them get the nausea that they say can go along with this?
I'd say about 50% get mild nausea that tends to
Does it
to
go
subside.
Away after you've been using it for a while?
It does go away. It really does go away. Some patients had one or two that stopped because of the nausea, because it just didn't go away. But again, in the high 90 percentile of patients, the nausea goes away.
Game changer. Thank you, Doc.
You're welcome, Bill.
Dr. Barry Twerkin, medical myth busting. Also host of Sunday House Call, Sunday afternoons at 3 on News Talk 580 CFRA.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Quick, if you got to buy groceries, go buy them now because they'll cost more in 20 minutes. I don't have to remind you that inflation is crazy, but the federal conservatives and Democrats were hammering away at the government yesterday on this issue, the cost of living. And so they should be. I mean, this is the issue that's on the mind of most Canadians. I know there was polling during the provincial election that said, this is not the number one issue. Cost of living is not the number one issue, except there were like a list of 10 different things that were actually, when you get down to it, cost of living. It's the economy, stupid, as the expression goes. And the interim Tory leader, Candace Bergen, has accused the Prime Minister of being vindictive in his opposition to her party's proposals on inflation.
He thinks he's hurting conservatives politically by saying no to our proposals. In fact, he is punishing Canadians with his petty political vengeance.
Should I tell you what the NDP leader said? Because Jagmeet Singh wanted in on this, criticizing the government, except that he's technically not part of the government, but practically he's part of the government. He has pledged to support them until the next election, which he will not force. Until they have a four-year term, he's not going to bring them. He's part of the problem, but he still wants in on the action, right? He wants to have it both ways. I'm going to criticize the government when it makes me look good, but I'm going to support them. And if he was smart enough to get a seat at the cabinet table as part of his informal coalition, he'd be able to sit down with the big boys and make his point there. But instead, I think he prefers to stand up and whine and complain and look like he's independent of the Liberals, but he's not. Anyway, I'll play it. Why not? He said, now that I've totally taken his credibility and exploded it, says workers, families, and kids are struggling as the cost of living skyrockets. But those at the very top, here we go, those at the very top are making profits.
In fact, we know right now that corporate profits, according to economists, are one of the major drivers of inflation. The fact that corporations are making record profits in this difficult time has contributed to at least a fourth of the inflation that we're experiencing right now.
I guess Jagmeet Singh is the only one without a registered retirement savings plan and is invested in these corporations, and we're counting on them to do well so that we can retire and have a little money, because we can't count on the government to give us money when we retire, pay into it our whole lives, and we get a pittance back when the time comes. But anyway, that's Jagmeet Singh making the kind of Andrea Horvath excuse. It's the rich. Just keep taxing the rich. Or at least in his case, it's corporations. There are more of those than there are actual billionaires, which is who she wanted to tax. What was the number we came up with for Ontario?
Was like 30, maybe?
30 people. We should tax these 30 people and solve the problems. And she wonders why she's unemployed. The innovation minister, François-Philippe Champagne, says inflation is happening around the globe. It's driven by the war in Ukraine. His government has done all it can.
I think one of the things we've achieved recently, which helps the cost of living, is childcare across Canada. Because if you're a family in many parts of the country, that's a big part of your budget.
Could you do more, though? I mean, could you not? Since the tax on gasoline is about discouraging us from driving, isn't the price big enough now on its own that we're going to discourage people from driving? Could you maybe at least temporarily take away your carbon tax? Could you do that? That would help a lot of Canadians. That would help a lot of families that have to drive to work, that have to drive their kids to the daycare that may be cheaper, but you still have to get them there. Could you maybe not do that? I mean, everybody got help during COVID, understandably to a degree, but we didn't even ask. We just cut checks for people. People who were called back to work, we need you at the restaurant. I'm getting free money from the government. I'm not going to bother. How about writing some checks for ordinary Canadians who are having trouble paying their grocery bills? How about that? I mean, listen, there are a lot of things you can do. I don't see them doing a whole lot except blaming it's the rest of the world. When the economy is booming because it's booming around the world, they take the credit. So guess what? The flip side of that coin is you got to own this. You may not be able to take away inflation, but you got to cushion the blow. And then maybe recognize that you helped us get in this situation by continuing to pay people not to work when they needed to work. And so labor shortages put up the price of labor. That adds to inflation. But now you're not going to help ordinary, hardworking Canadians buy a couple of apples at the grocery store today? 7:15, the morning rush. We'll go all night, just stepping with a
woman I love. All my troubles standing up and when I'm in. You're listening to the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
The big story leading up to this Summit of Americas yesterday was that President Biden had said, we shouldn't invite countries that are not like-minded. Venezuela, Cuba, countries that don't think the same way we do. They don't have the same idea of how you run an economy and how you treat people. And you see how on the fence Justin Trudeau tried to stay on that one? Are you kidding me? You can't weigh in against countries like Venezuela and Cuba. What the hell good are you? You know he loves Cuba, right? His dad was a big fan of Cuba. A lot of Canadians, unfortunately, have become big fans of Cuba as well. You kind of forget. Well, there's almost no opposition in Cuba. People love it there. No, everyone who hated it kind of disappeared over the years. But sure, whatever. I think you should have just said right away, yeah, if we're going to have an economic forum about how to deal with the current economic situation and worldwide inflation, why are we bringing in the commies? Right? Let's not talk. What do they add? What value do they add? Anyway, he stayed on the fence. He also dropped by, since he's traveling anyway, he dropped by NORAD's headquarters, which is in Colorado. He and the defense minister, Anita Anand. And this is the Joint Command Early Warning System. When I was a kid, people talked about this a lot, because it was a big threat of a nuclear war with the Soviet Union, and NORAD is a headquarters in North Bay, and Canadians are a big part of that joint North American protection. But we don't hear about it as much these days. Maybe we should. Maybe we should be thinking about it more with Russia going rogue internationally, and that's perhaps part of the reason that they went to visit. Here's what they had to say.
Whether it's new threats, new technologies, or shifting geopolitical realities, it becomes all the more important for friends and allies like Canada and the United States to continue working so closely together.
In fact, he held it up as a shining example of the unique ties between Canada and the United States.
This is the only place in the world where two countries come together under a joint command to protect our territories.
You know, we had NORAD when Donald Trump was president, too. Would he have gone to NORAD then and said the exact same things? I'm wondering. I'm not wondering much, because I don't think he would have. Although Donald Trump didn't seem to be a big fan of even NATO. Don't know how he felt about NORAD. I'm sure there's something written about that, but I don't remember. The defense minister, Anita Anand, says Canada and the U.S. are on the same page when it comes to upgrading the shared continental defense system we call NORAD.
Those form the foundation of our discussions relating to NORAD modernization and continental defense.
Do you think that means the same as it does with NATO? We're on the same page as long as they, you know, they mostly pay for it. Because we don't want to spend any money.
No, we can't increase our spending. Don't be crazy.
No. Don't get nuts. And a very unrelated issue, because I just realized I've about like 2 minutes here, and I couldn't find a place to put it in the show otherwise, but I think it's pretty interesting. I've been looking really closely. It's too soon, I admit. But some of the high-rises that are going up around Dow's Lake, and I'm dreaming of a time, 2 or 3 years from now maybe, when I retire and the kids are off at university, that I live in one of those great condos, and you got Chinatown right there, and you're close to downtown. Maybe have a boat at the marina there. I can go sit on that and sunny afternoons in the summer. I like the idea of condo living downtown. It's very appealing to me. I've done it before when I was single. Some of my greatest memories. And don't get me wrong. I like this lifestyle right now and where I'm at with the family. And I think it's great. And now there's talk of another high-rise proposal, which opponents are saying this came out of nowhere. It's near Baseline and Fisher. It's very close to the experimental farm. You know that the lefties, the socialists, who don't want us to drive and think we should live in a denser area, they believe that's true until you get anywhere near the experimental farm. Who needs a hospital anyway? We need green space. Don't touch it. So I never quite know where they're going to come down on this stuff. But the residents are saying it caught them by surprise. This is Susan Paul, a local resident.
We are a sea of one and two-story houses with the farm on the one side. So this is completely out of character for this whole area.
Susan Nimby also says Susan Paul also says she's gathered more than 100 signatures in a petition.
We're not against development as long as it fits the character of the neighborhood. Like, this is zoned for five-story building, and we're not against that. It's a sea of one and two-story houses with the farm to our north. And if this goes ahead as planned, it means the farm will be walled off by a sea of 30-story skyrises.
So what? Seriously, it's not on the farm. So what if the farm is walled off by a sea of high-rises? You know one of the most beautiful parks in the world is walled off by a sea of high-rises? You ever been in Central Park? It's a fantastic place. 1 minute you're walking on a busy street. Oh, look at the museum. It's gorgeous. You take 10 steps and the sound of the city seems to vanish as you enter the green space. Now, this is not the same. You'd be walking through a cornfield or something. But so she's not against development as long as it's another two-story house or a stalk of corn. Okay. Up to 5 stories high. That's can't have it both ways. Look, if you're going to get more people into public transit and you're going to stop urban sprawl, we're going to need more density. And that's going to be next door to some people who are not going to like it. But don't worry, your property value will go up. You can sell your house and you can build another condo there. Listen, I'm not saying I'm totally in favor of it. I'd like to know more about it. But my knee-jerk reaction isn't to go, ooh, don't build any condos. They can't have it both ways. We want density. Just not next door to me. Could you build it? Maybe put the density in Orleans next door to Matt. I don't even mind all the development around Manotick. I know a lot of my neighbors would be mad about that. I think it's great. They built a little condo on one of the corners here next to Manotick Village. I'd be okay with that. I think the seniors' home they just built, beautiful. Tore down a couple of dilapidated old homes, built a beautiful building there. People are upset, though, who moved in because nobody told them about the trucks. A lot of trucks rolling by. A lot of older people going, what? I can't hear anything, but I could sure hear those trucks. Now, they find it pretty dangerous to try to cross the street and move around in the neighborhood. Those trucks shouldn't be right there anyway. I thought they built that new bridge, the Vimy Bridge, to get rid of this traffic. I also don't think those bridges in Manotick can carry that much. Like, those bridges are going to crumble. They can't be built for that many trucks a day. Anyway, I like development. Nothing wrong with it. Build a condo and I will eventually come. 7:30, it's the Morning Rush. Oh, you make me complete.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Sorry, I'm just making sure my iPad isn't running out of power. I'll plug in my, I think this is called a USB-C charger. Well, oh, this iPad over here, the one on my left, no, that's a whole different thing entirely. And my old iPod with all my music collected on it that I used to like to hook up in the boat, that's a different thing too. Man, Apple started to piss me off over the years. Every time they changed the way I could charge the thing, it just got angrier and angrier and angrier. Now they got stuff that has all kind, right? They don't even have one standard within Apple. Why is my iPad a USB-C port and the other one, what do they call it, a lightning port? I don't care what you call it. I know they're different. That's stupid. I got to carry two different chargers with me. Don't even talk to me about the Apple Watch. Don't even bring it up. But in Europe, Europe has now come up with a standard, an agreement that all things must be USB-C. Woo! I'm all on board. I don't know much about this stuff. I just know what I like. Carmi Levy is the technology analyst and journalist. Maybe he's listening to me right now thinking I'm crazy and I'm missing the point here, but somehow I don't think so, Carmi. I'm annoyed.
Oh, no, I'm totally there with you, Bill. I've been annoyed for years, and it hits me every time I travel. When I look at my bag, my laptop bag, you know, the one that I carry all my technology in, and I realize that the cables and the chargers and all the accessories that I need to connect everything up, that I have to take multiple versions of them because every device uses a different kind of connector to both charge and sync. And it's incredibly annoying. It's incredibly expensive. It's incredibly wasteful. Think of how many cables you replace over the life of the time of a device, then multiply that by how many different kinds of cables you have to care and feed. And it's ridiculous. And every manufacturer in the history of technology has kind of come up with its own proprietary, unique to them design. So you're kind of stuck with them. And Apple, you know, the rest of the industry has kind of moved towards standards over the in recent years, but Apple has stuck with Lightning. Apple basically defines its own standards and makes life really expensive for us and for planet Earth because we're discarding all of this stuff. This all becomes e-waste, millions of tons of e-waste every year.
Well, but Apple says, no.
Just on having their own way. Yeah.
Apple says if you change that now, people are going to throw out all those old cords.
Oh,
forgetting
oh,
the fact that that would be a one-time thing as opposed to continuing like this for the next 200 years.
Exactly. I say pish-posh to that. Apple is just upset that they're not going to make millions of dollars selling us cables that we can't use on anything else. They've had a really good business with this Lightning deal for the better part of the last decade. They had a really good business beforehand, that 30-pin connector that was awful. They just don't want to give up profits and revenue, and I get that. But
now I try to charge something, Carmi, and I'm trying to plug in the Lightning thing, but oh, that's not a Lightning. It's a... Right, and then there's that other cord that the BlackBerry used to plug into, you know, the one that's a little shorter on the top that is on the bottom. And no matter how many times, you always put it in upside down the first time. And then you flip it, and then it's upside down still, and then you flip it again. And,
and you probably bent the pins as well, and you damaged the cable, and you had to go out and buy another one. Don't ask
me how
many times. I did that. And so, you know, USB-C, I think we all agree that it has become a common standard globally, and Europe tends to lead that. They've always been somewhat progressive when it comes to technology legislation, and that's happening here. They realize that it's a big deal. It's upsetting consumers. It's allowing companies like Apple to profit unnecessarily off of you and me, and something's got to change. And so that legislation is going to be passed. It's kind of formality now that Parliament and Council at the European Union are going to say yes in a couple of months. And by the end of 2024, basically every smartphone, tablet, small electronic device is going to have to use USB-C, whether the company wants it or not. The cool thing that I like about this is that even though the law is in Europe, the way the tech industry works is like Apple isn't going to create one device for Europe and one device for North America. It's going to affect it globally. So,
well, don't be too sure about that.
No, it'd be way too expensive for Apple to have unique standards for different continents or different countries. And so I think it's only a matter of time before it comes here. I'm really confident. And I have a funny feeling that, you know, you may have very well have bought your last Lightning equipped device over the next little while.
You know, you talked about traveling. I remember the first time when I got my iPad Pro, I threw the cable in a bag. Like, I'm going to need a different cable. I thought it was so smart. Then when I got there, I realized, oh, no, the other end of the cable's different. It doesn't fit into the standard Apple little block that plugs into the wall. I got to have a different one of those as well. I was so infuriated. So now I got to go out and buy one, and they're not cheap.
They're not. I mean, you know, a typical Lightning accessory will cost more than a typical USB-C accessory because Lightning is Apple only, whereas USB-C is the entire industry and lots of different companies that design devices and accessories for USB-C. So by, you know, the virtues of economies of scale, it's more cost effective. It's cheaper for you and me. So, and you can use it on more devices. And so, and Apple knows this. I mean, they've been using, like you said, you've got an iPad Pro, which uses USB-C. Apple uses USB-C on its MacBook laptops now. So it's not that Apple isn't using it. They just kind of want to hold on to it for a little bit longer. And they're whining because the European Union is forcing them to take it away sooner than they'd like. Well, you know, Apple, you're a $2 trillion plus company. You make a lot of money. Too bad. Suck it up.
Well, I assume when they put the USB-C cord on the Apple iPad, the Pro, I assumed that was the beginning, and then every phone and every other device would do the same. But this thing is a few years old now. What was that about? Was that just another way to cash in?
Yeah, I think so. I think there were some technical sort of issues with the iPad because, like, different devices work at different wattages and voltages and have different electrical needs. And I think just the engineering of the iPad Pro at the time versus their other devices dictated, well, you know, it'll be better if we use USB-C. And same thing with Macs is you can't power a MacBook, a laptop, with a Lightning cable, but you can with USB-C. So I think that speaks volumes about the technology. And so they started on that, but then they kind of hit the brakes and they continue to introduce other devices, like iPhones still use Lightning cables. Their lower end iPads still use them. And I think they just kind of liked it. It's almost like a kid holding onto their blankie. You're comfortable with it. It's been like that for a while. You kind of like making the money off of it and forcing customers to buy from you instead of from someone else. I just don't think they wanted to give it up so quickly. Well, you know, the world has other plans. Sorry.
So I could now travel with one block that plugs into the wall and one cable and charge my devices one at a time if I choose to. If I have enough devices that I feel like that won't be enough, then I'll bring two, but they'll be the exact same thing. No confusion, easy to find, easy to replace, probably cheaper. I mean, that all sounds great to me, but I guess if you travel in Europe, though, Carmi, you still have a different block, right? Because in the UK, a different voltage, different system of plug. So it's not entirely universal.
Not entirely universal. I mean, you know, we still have different electrical standards in different countries, but at the very least, the cables themselves will be okay. And Apple's pretty good at having international travel. Their devices are easily supportable with different blocks. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. That was a problem before. This legislation doesn't solve that, but it certainly solves the cable issue. And, of course, you know, over time, devices become more wirelessly chargeable as well. You can charge some Apple devices using MagSafe. That doesn't change as well. And the European legislators are promising that as the technologies continue to evolve, they'll make sure that this legislation evolves as well. So it's not that it's frozen in time. They'll keep updating it as new technologies are introduced.
So when do you think it'll happen in North America? Not this round of new devices. Next year, maybe?
I think so. I think conversations, and this is going to spark a lot of conversations here in Canada. I know there are already calls for it on both sides of the border here. And I would expect roughly around this time next year, we'll probably see legislation introduced. Because even though it's inevitable the devices themselves are going to change, I think it makes sense for Canada and for the U.S. to have their own legislation that aligns nicely with what's happening in Europe. That way we have good global standards in place and consumers are protected no matter where they live or where they travel.
Yeah, I mean, we sound a little spoiled that this is our worry, that need different cables to plug into our many devices. Yeah. Meanwhile, there are parts of the world that still don't have access to this kind of technology or very little.
That's right. It definitely is a first world problem. But at the same time, you know, the amount of e-waste, it makes it everyone's problem. And it's a little less trivial than we originally thought. So it's the right move in the right direction for the right reason. And I'm glad to see it happening now.
Good save there and make us sound like we're not both two jerks. Only worry about technology. Thank you, Carmi.
Thanks, Bill.
Carmi Levy, technology analyst and journalist. on the story that the EU has agreed to a single mobile charging port. And Apple will have to get on board with the USB-C. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
Trending. Trending today with Matt Harris.
Matt F. Harris, that is, with an important trending today.
Yeah, definitely.
Not because it's our country's issue, but because it's our neighbors, our cousins, the place that many of us go on vacation. It's a real problem they have with guns, and getting political movement on it has been impossible.
Yeah, and there was a school shooting in Uvalde, Texas, a couple of weeks ago now, and their most famous resident was at the White House yesterday to talk about gun control. It's the hometown of Matthew McConaughey. And he got up there and he gave a very passionate speech about gun control, and he broke up a couple of times. But I wanted to specifically talk about, he highlighted one kid specifically, held up the picture, and just told some great stories. And you realize just how young these kids are, right? And just how heartbreaking this whole situation is. So here's Matthew McConaughey yesterday at the White House.
We also met Anna and Danilo. The mom and the stepdad of 9-year-old Maite Rodriguez. And Maite wanted to be a marine biologist. She was already in contact with Corpus Christi University of A&M for her future college enrollment. 9 years old. Maite cared for the environment so strongly that when the city asked her mother if they could release some balloons into the sky in her memory, her mom said, oh no, Maite wouldn't want to litter. Maite wore green high-top Converse with a heart she had hand-drawn on the right toe because they represented her love of nature. Camilla's got these shoes. Can you show these shoes, please? Wore these every day. Green Converse with a heart on the right toe. These are the same green Converse on her feet that turned out to be the only clear evidence that could identify her after the shooting.
My God.
I mean, that was for me the part that got me, because it was just, that was the only thing they could identify her with, was, and he's holding up the green shoes with the heart, and it was just devastating. But he continued with more stories about that girl and specifically.
Maite wrote a letter. Her mom said if Maite's letter could help someone accomplish her dream, that then her death would have an impact, and it would mean her dying had a point and wasn't pointless, that it would make the loss of her life matter. The letter reads, Marine biologist, I want to pass school to get to my dream college. My dream college is in Corpus Christi by the ocean. I need to live next to the ocean because I want to be a marine biologist. Marine biologists study animals and the water. Most of the time I will be in a lab. Sometimes I will be on TV.
Matthew McConaughey. Wow. I have no words to add to that. The Morning Rush, Bill Carroll.
Paré's $1,000 Minute. Brought to you by Alpine Credits. Homeowners get approved.
All right, we have Stacy on the line. She says she's from Somerset. Is that a street or a town?
That's just an area, Somerset West in Ottawa.
Ooh, one of those fancy neighborhood names a real estate agent came up with to charge you more for the house. I get it. I understand. Okay. I shouldn't be mean to you, Stacy, because you said yes when others said no. So thank you. Are you there, Stacy?
Oh, I'm here.
Okay. Here are the rules.
10 questions a minute, $10 per correct answer. All 10 gives you $1,000. Have to take your first answer. You can say pass. We'll go back if there's time. You got it?
Okay.
Here we go. Question number one. How many millimeters of rain fell in Ottawa yesterday?
20.
What's the name of the new Saudi Golf League? When is the next Ottawa City Council meeting?
Tomorrow.
Which former U.S. Congresswoman held a gun control event outside of the Washington Monument yesterday?
I have no idea. Sorry, pass.
Which star of the Scream movie says she won't be in Scream 6?
Oh, gosh. The girl of Friends.
Who is the federal innovation minister?
Oh, I really did bad at this test. Sorry, I don't know.
What is Matthew McConaughey's hometown?
Don't know.
Which team will the Red Blacks play in their home opener?
Oh, my gosh. Hamilton.
You're bombing this one. Which member of our morning show is working their last day on Friday?
Sorry, say it again?
Who on the morning show is leaving us on Friday?
Don't know, sorry.
Oh.
I thought I'd be better at this.
Stacy, I was rooting for you because you helped us out.
I know, you did bail us out.
Well, watch how liberal I can be now with the money. Watch this.
Okay. Here we go. How many millimeters of rain fell in Ottawa yesterday? You said 20. Judges?
17.9. Close enough. Give it the 10
close
bucks.
Close enough. What's the name of the new Saudi golf league? You passed on that one. It's LIV.
It'll be gone soon enough anyway. Give it the 10 bucks.
When is the next city council meeting in Ottawa? You said tomorrow. It's today.
I can't help.
Yeah, we can't give you that one. Which former U.S. congresswoman held a gun control event outside the Washington Monument yesterday? We were looking for Gabby Gifford. Which
victim
star
of gun violence herself? Yeah.
Yeah. Which star of the Scream movie says she won't be in Scream 6? You did not say Neve Campbell.
Or is it Neve? I wanted to hear which one she went with.
Yeah.
Do you call her Neve or Neve Campbell, Stacy?
Yes.
Okay. Give her 10 bucks.
Who's the federal innovation minister? You passed on that one too. Francois-Philippe Champagne. What is Matthew McConaughey's hometown, or where is his hometown? We're looking for Uvalde, Texas. Which team will the Red Blacks play in their home opener? You said Hamilton.
Bombed it.
Winnipeg. And which member of our team is working her last day on Friday? It's Maddie. Her last day is Friday. I don't know.
Gave you 30 bucks, but I was generous. What would it really have been?
It would have been zero. Ooh. You can make a case for $10, maybe.
$30, Stacy. Congratulations.
Okay.
Don't spend it all in Somerset East or whatever that area is called. It's 8:28, the morning rush. Coming up next, Reputation Rescue. Can anybody help Dustin Johnson's reputation in Canada? If Karen can't, no one can. That's coming up next.
Now, The Inbox. Everybody's talking about. On News Talk 580 CFRA.
Talk about standardizing phone chargers. The EU is doing that now. The USB-C port. How about all those portable device chargers with the round connectors? So many different voltages. Some are AC output, some are DC. And if they are DC, then the positive could be on the outside or in the center. My wife, not understanding this, just grabs whatever charger she finds. They fit, but they're not compatible for charging. Yeah, that's a good way to blow up something that you need. Steve in Overbrook. That's hilarious. It's true. And then you lose one of them and you think, well, is this the one that fits it or not fits it? You got to read the little tiny letters on the back about how many amps and how many volts and whether it's DC or AC. Oh, it's so annoying. Buses have not been packed since pre-COVID Ottawa, so I'm not sure where that lady gets her information from. Try taking the bus daily from Kevin, Ottawa. What lady's talking about?
I mean, that lady is Maddie and she takes the bus to and from work, so.
And what did she say? The buses?
Were crowded.
Oh. When was that yesterday's show?
No, it was like 3 minutes ago. We just had this conversation.
Oh, I didn't hear it.
With your COVID fog.
I had the conversation with her?
Yeah, you asked her about masks on buses.
Oh, okay. Yes, you mentioned in passing. I thought we did some segment.
No. It was just a quick mention. And they
buses and
inspired
like transit use overall. I'm thinking big picture here. Yeah, it's true. Buses are not very crowded these days. That's when I said I'd just get up and move if someone is coughing next to me on a crowded bus. Okay, see where you're going there. Bit of a stretch. Lansdowne, why condos in the middle of a park and not a long bank like those on North Adelaide Street? Units won't solve affordable housing or shortages for families. Greenies, do towers affect air quality? Angela, so many questions there. I'm going to deal with precisely none of them. I wanted to comment on the Ryan Whitney hockey player rant about Toronto Pearson Airport. His crybaby talk on the media and his words, biggest disgrace to men. With all that's going on in the world, this is a typical example of a spoiled professional sports player. Grow up, Paul from Pembroke.
I don't see it that way at all. I see it as someone with a massive following who can actually get people to listen. Because if I went to the plane to the airport, I wouldn't be able to get that kind of response.
Well, there are always bigger problems than being delayed when you're traveling, but it's a serious issue with our economy, and it impacts on a lot of things. So I thought, yeah, it's a guy who's using his celebrity for something useful, something that we could all benefit from. The experimental farm is the biggest waste of land in the city. It should be completely redeveloped. You can save the bike and make a little park along it. That bike path is literally the only purpose that land currently has. There's no need for all the empty land, only occupied by grass, Eric. I do drive by there sometimes and I think, what are they planting? I just see long grass. Are they doing any real experiments out there? People have to stop blaming the government. My gas is taking half my pay. I was a single mother majority of my life, preparing meals, go for sales, past due date, grow a garden. No one should be starving in Canada when we have so many services. Plus, get another job as a second salary. Take the bus instead of the car. This inflation is correcting bad habits, especially young generation that have not gone through hard times. Diane in Ottawa. Wow. What if you're a senior on a fixed income? We missed you, Annette. Paul. That's it for me. I'm so done. Let's spin the wheel of hosts. Who's coming up next? Famous?
Oh boy.
Someone unknown.
Andy Pinsent.
Well, he's somewhere in between.
Yeah, I know him.
He's famous if you listen to our station.
He's not Graham famous.
Well, he's not the big time TV anchors. No. But who is, right? Just the big time TV anchors. All right. Thank you very much. Enjoy the show that's coming up next, and I'll be back tomorrow morning. You know, if it goes that way. Have a great day, everybody. This has been The Morning Rush. I'm Bill Carroll.